Okay, next we have Corinne Wright from the Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia and Thomas Al from the Clean Air Board of Central Pennsylvania.
I wasn't sure if I had to push the button. I want to say that when I was a young student many years ago, I was reading about the terrible effects of mercury in the waters outside of Japan and thought surely the effects of mercury, the Minamata disease that resulted, would be taken care of right away. And here we are. I think it's 45 years later. I'm not sure of the date, but here we are. And I thank the EPA for this hearing because of all states, the Pennsylvania, and I also thank Sandy Bowers with her article, timely article, in the Philadelphia Inquirer this weekend, comparing the power plants in New Jersey, the Mercer power generating plant, and the one in Northampton here in Pennsylvania. For that information, because I come as a, you know, wonder why I'm coming here as a Sister of St. Francis. I've been working for 10 years with our congregation's sustainable efforts, and we start at home. We try to lighten our footprint at home by purchasing wind power, installing a solar roof on the barn of our CSA, which feeds 120 families in the Aston area. And so is that enough? It certainly is not enough. We have to really speak out on these issues that affect everybody. And for us as Franciscans, we feel a total commitment to the poor, the vulnerable, those that can't speak for themselves. And I include in those my Newman students. I teach environmental courses at Newman University. And I had a student this semester, and not just an 18-year-old, a 30-year-old woman who wants to get a PhD in environmental science, who said, "I never knew mercury was that bad." I said, "Where have you been?" So anyway, I say it's so important to speak out simply because people do not know. And that little $3 to $4 or $7 per month or whatever is going to add to that bill, the electric bill. I heard on, I think it was NPR, but I don't quote me, the other day about 20 years ago, would anybody say that they would be paying $120 a month for cable TV? Would they be paying $120 for their cell phones? And yet, we do. And nobody's complaining if you're sitting there with a cell phone. So those kind of expenses, particularly when it's affecting the lives of people that cannot make these decisions, the effect on children and the unborn is so much more than for those of us that lived a long life. So I want to thank Sandy for her article, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Au, spelled A-U. I'm president of the Clean Air Board of Central Pennsylvania.
If you could bring the microphone a little closer.
The Clean Air Board was formed in the fall of 2005 after 100 Cumberland County physicians signed and published in a local newspaper an open letter informing the community of the growing danger of air pollution. Initially, a small group of people of faith gathered to support the physicians in educating our community and advocating for clean air. We have grown to not only include that faith community, but people in the transportation business, teachers, lawyers, parents, and the medical community. For many years after the enactment of the Clean Air Act, Americans co-fire generating plants have avoided the maximum achievable emission technology regulation required by the Act. We've heard today that utility power plants constitute the single largest unregulated source of mercury emissions. Congress told the EPA to clean up toxic air pollution in 1990, assuming that the EPA's final rule complies with Congress's directive, Americans can look forward to a day where they, again, can eat fish without serving their families with an unhealthy dose of methylmercury. We've heard that the mercury emitted by coal-fired utilities is highly toxic to humans. Exposure to even small amounts of methylmercury can lead to irreversible neurological damage. Methylmercury's neurodevelopment effects pose a particular risk to developing fetuses, children, and adults up to age 20. The most recent data suggests risks to the cardiovascular systems of adults as well. And in my prepared comments, I cite to a May 2011 study. Mercury emitted to the air from coal plants and other sources deposited on the surrounding lands make its way into fish tissue in the form of methylmercury. And the primary route of human exposure to methylmercury is through the consumption of fish. With widespread mercury contamination in the nation's rivers and lakes, agencies have increased numbers of fish consumption advisory. All 50 states have issued advisories placing some of all their waters off limits for those who would eat fish that they catch. That includes 100% of lakes, Superior, Michigan, Huron, and Erie, and significant stretches of coastal waters. Currently, all of Pennsylvania remains under a blanket advisory that recommends limiting consumption of recreationally caught fish to one meal per week. And all the major U.S. physicians' associations, including the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and Physicians for Social Responsibility, have all urged stronger mercury rules. One consequence of the various regulations at the state level is the control of mercury through activated carbon injection that has been successfully implemented by a number of utilities across the country. I refer to our 2009 General Accounting Accountability Office study, which shows that mercury emission reductions can be achieved as high as 99%. And these can be achieved for the various coal-fired plants in the country. Some utility companies have recognized the need for reductions of mercury and other toxic emissions. According to one utility executive, Paul Allen at Constellation Energy, they have, quote, "We have recently completed the installation of major air quality control systems, including scrubber baghouse and other equipment at our major coal facilities in Maryland. These systems work effectively and result in dramatically lower emissions of mercury, sulfur dioxide, particulate matter, and acid gases. We know from experience that constructing this technology can be done in a reasonable time frame, especially with good advanced planning, and there is meaningful job creation associated with these projects. We at the Clean Air Board support the proposed rule on mercury and other air toxins. We think this rule can help the air that we breathe and the fish that we put, make the fish that we put on our tables safer. Thank you.
And thanks to both of you. Our next two witnesses are Ed Perry from the National Wildlife Federation and Don Robertson from the Isaac Walton League of America.
My name is Ed Perry. I'm the Pennsylvania Outreach Coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation's Clean Energy and Climate Change Campaign. In a former life, I was an aquatic biologist who spent a 30-year career with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service working to protect streams and wetlands from unwise development. Unfortunately, I couldn't protect them from mercury contamination. I'm also a lifelong fisherman, and my wife and two sons and I have fished and camped all over our great country. And some of my best experiences were catching grayling and West Slope cutthroat from high-altitude mountain lakes that we thought were pristine and having these fish for dinner over a campfire at night. But my favorite stream in the whole country is right in my backyard, the Susquehanna River. And my family and I have been floating that river, camping on the islands and wading, fishing for smallmouth bass for 30 years. The one thing we don't experience, though, is cooking those fish and eating them over our campfire at night, because I know they're contaminated with mercury. Pennsylvania is downwind from hundreds of coal-fired power plants, and that river all the way from the New York border down to the west branch of the Susquehanna River is a fish advisory for mercury. This year, for the first time, I'm going to be taking my grandson fishing. And like anyone who's taken a little kid fishing, you know any fish he catches, he's going to want to keep and take home. And I'm going to have him throw those fish back, because I don't want that little kid that's still growing to be eating fish that are contaminated with mercury. You know, when you think about it, it's the year 2011. It's hard to believe that mercury, something so toxic as mercury, is not being regulated from coal-fired power plants. Pennsylvania ranks second in the country in the pounds of mercury emitted, and we have four of the dirtiest coal-fired power plants in the nation. This is one area where we don't want to be a leader. Even though mercury contamination or toxicity is well documented in the scientific literature, the coal industry and its allies have been fighting against sensible regulations for decades. Frankly, I have had it with that tired refrain that these new regulations are going to damage our economy, when the real cost is borne by our kids, our families, and those with health problems. It's long past time that we implement the technically and economically feasible alternatives that EPA is proposing to regulate mercury emissions, and we strongly support your actions in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Robertson.
Hear me okay? I'm Don Robertson. I'm the president of the Pennsylvania Division of the Isaac Walton League. The Isaac Walton League has strongly supported the new updates for Clean Air Act safeguards and reduced hazard air pollution from power plants, including mercury, acid gases, and toxins, and other pollutants known as air toxins. For more than a decade, the League has actively campaigned strong federal regulations for these, for the largest source of mercury and air toxins emissions in the United States, coal-fired power plants. Our organization participated in legal action to ensure the Clean Air Act standards are achieved, and our members have previously testified before the EPA for control of these dangerous pollutants. Today, we applaud the EPA for taking the appropriate, significant, long overdue steps to protect the environmental health. These standards will provide a level playing field for power plants across the country because of mercury pollution can travel long distances nationwide. Standards are essential to reduce contamination of water bodies and fish across the nation. For example, the Isaac Walton League members of Minnesota were successfully in getting requirements for the Minnesota power plants to reduce mercury emission by 90%, but Minnesota's efforts to reduce mercury contamination in fish will fall short if other states' power plants do not reduce the mercury as well. Thank you for your time, and we hope that you can take and bring us to a better effort for both sides. Thank you.
And thank you for coming and providing that testimony. Thanks to both of you. Next, we have Horace W. Strand from the Chester Environmental Partnership and William Kramer from the Sierra Club.
My name is Reverend Dr. Horace Strand. I'm the chairman of the Chester Environmental Partnership in the city of Chester. The Chester Environmental Partnership was organized to deal with the enormous clustering of environmental unfriendly facilities in our small community with a population of about 4,500 residents. In our small community, we have approximately three coal power plants, one on the eastern side, one on the western side, and one centrally located within the community. We're also surrounded by facilities such as the Covanta Trash Steam Plant, which is the fourth largest in the nation, a rock crushing facility called Avenesio, and at one point we had an autoclave facility of infectious medical waste that brought in 5.5 times the amount of medical waste generated in the entire state of Pennsylvania, as well as BP, Refinery, Sun Oil, and ConocoPhillips, and other facilities that emit unfriendly toxins and particulates into our airway. As a result of these combined environmentally unfriendly facilities, our city, which was unknown to a lot of folks as one of the first cities in America, is noted as having health conditions that are ranked in comparison with a third-class nation. We have some of the highest cancer rate, infant mortality rate, heart and respiratory problems, and we're noted as the cancer belt along this southern part of Delaware County and the eastern part and western part of 291, ranking with Eddystone, Chester, Marcus Hook, and Trainer Borough. I'm here to say that people are hurting, people are dying prematurely and suffering as a result of improper emissions into our airways. There's not enough money in the world that you can pay an individual for loss of life and for a short life expectancy due to the fact that they have inhaled toxins and particulates that have caused them to develop all type of cancers, respiratory problems, and health effects. Our children are suffering. We applaud the EPA for taking this bold step at this pivotal time in history to do something to help people hurting the most. I ask the EPA to resist the pressures of industries whose only interest is the bottom dollar and preserving the status quo, and to keep 10% of America who makes over $100,000 a year empowered while the other 90% suffer as a result of their practices. I do believe that if we stand together and let our voices be heard, America will have a better chance. The quality of life for our citizens will be encouraged to be better. And I also believe that we can win this battle. And once again, I applaud President Obama for his leadership and for the EPA Secretary, Ms. Jackson, for taking this bold initiative. And from the point of view of people who are hurting and dying and suffering, please do what you can do to help us have a reasonable quality of life. In closing, in our city, we also noted for a high crime rate, where many young men in our city have been killed and murdered in our streets. And even though we have a high crime rate of murder, yet it does not compare to the many people who die prematurely as a result of developing cancer, heart problems, and having heart attacks and losing their lives prematurely because of bad emissions and things that are hailing in the airway. I think that we need to look at this issue as just as serious as a crime laid in our communities and help people who are hurting the most. Thank you very much.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Strand, because Chester, gosh, over 10 years ago now, was one of the first communities to come to us and express their deep levels of concerns over environmental justice issues. And I know the regional office has been working with Chester since then to try to see what could be done to help. But I want to thank you for coming today and participating in this rulemaking, and assure you we will be listening to those comments and taking them into account.
We thank you for this opportunity as well. And also we thank you because this is one of the rare times in history that the community is not fighting its government. And that's what EP has brought to the table, an agency that's listening to the people and is trying to make a difference. And I was in Texas where they had a meeting with the Congress fighting the EPA, accusing the EPA of hindering economic development and growth, and because they're coming out with rules to try to help people live longer. Don't fall for that baloney. Don't give in to it. stand for what is right as you're doing, and the community and American citizens will applaud you and thank you continuously.
Thanks for being here today. Mr. Kramer.
Thank you. My name is William Kramer, and I'm an organizer with the Sierra Club and also the father of a four-year-old named Noah. I do not currently live in Philadelphia, but I'm hoping to move here by the end of the year. And I'm also not a neurologist, but when my wife was pregnant, we started reading about the health effects of mercury on infants, and we got scared. We read that one out of every six pregnant women have mercury levels in their blood high enough to reach or surpass the EPA's safety threshold for mercury. Even though we work hard to feed our son a healthy diet and are especially careful about the kinds of fish he eats, there's nothing we can do about the air he breathes. The only people who can change that are our elected and government officials, and that's why it's so important for me to speak to you today. For me, clean air is important for my health and for the health of my son. We all enjoy biking and hiking. We are concerned about the quality of air so we can enjoy these activities when we move here. So it's something that's important to us economically, too, and I think it's important to other people that when they move to a city, they expect clean air. And I think people factor that in, and that impacts the economies of cities. And also, my son has allergies, so we want to make sure that he can play outside and still be healthy when we move here. My wife and I, as parents, try our best to provide our son with a well-balanced diet so we can grow up healthy, but the consumer choices we make are not the only things impacting his health. My son and all of us have our health impacted by our environment, the air we breathe, the water we drink. We count on our government, in this case, the Environmental Protection Agency, to protect us from air and water pollution that will harm our health. I am grateful that the EPA has finally, after 20 years, or more than 20 years, come up with a strong rule to reduce air toxins like mercury. And I believe that this rule will benefit our environment, public health, and the economy, since a healthy workforce is a productive workforce. I urge you to adopt the new mercury air toxic rule. Thank you very much.
And thanks to both of you for coming today. Next, we have Scott Maneker from the American Thoracic Society and Chris Sammy from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Good morning. I'm Dr. Scott Maneker, a pulmonary and critical care physician at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm an active runner. I'm a parent of three children. My family, my colleagues, and my patients all will benefit from the cleaner air that will result from implementing this proposed rule. But I speak this morning on behalf of the American Thoracic Society, a medical professional organization of over 15,000 physicians, researchers, and allied health professionals dedicated to the prevention, detection, treatment, and cure of respiratory, sleep, and critical care illnesses through research, education, and advocacy. Abundant research demonstrates that air pollution is bad for your health. Numerous chamber studies convincingly show that exposure to air pollution reduces pulmonary function and promotes airway inflammation. Epidemiologic studies link air pollution to a multitude of adverse health consequences, including cardiac deaths, respiratory deaths, heart attacks, vascular remodeling, exacerbations of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, asthma flares, and low birth weights in newborns. But the most impressive feature of the scientific literature regarding air pollution is the comprehensive demonstration, with literally hundreds of studies, that air pollution in myriad forms is bad for human health. These research results are also consistent over decades as researchers applied ever better research technologies to demonstrate these adverse health effects of air pollution at consistently smaller doses. Coal and oil-fired power plants are a significant source of air pollution in the United States. Coal-fired power plants emit a complex mixture of air pollutants, including acid gases, heavy metals, and particulate matter. Additionally, the pollutants emitted from these smokestacks are precursors for additional pollutants like ozone and PM2.5, particulate matter less than 25 micrometers in diameter. Pollution from these power plants has an immediate health impact on the nearby community, as well as sending pollution to downwind communities. The American Thoracic Society strongly supports the EPA proposed rule to reduce toxic air emissions from coal-fired and oil-fired power plants. Implementation of the proposed rule will have a significantly positive impact on our nation's health. The rule will require that all coal and oil-fired power plants install pollution control equipment that reduces air pollution emissions. It is encouraging that operators of over half of U.S. coal-fired power plants have already acted responsibly and proactively, installing equipment that meets the standards of the proposed rule. We hope that with implementation of the EPA rule, the remaining power plants will follow the actions of their industry partners and install readily available pollution control technology. Reducing air pollution will have significant health benefits for the American people. When implemented, the toxic air rule will prevent 17,000 premature deaths and 11,000 heart attacks. The rule will protect the health of America's children by avoiding 120,000 cases of asthma symptoms, 11,000 cases of acute bronchitis, and 12,000 emergency room and hospital visits each year. In conclusion, exposure to air pollution creates real dangers. The science documenting the adverse health effects of air pollution is conclusive. The technology required to reduce air pollution is readily available and in use today, and the benefits of the proposed rule are meaningful and significant. And for all these reasons, the American Thoracic Society strongly supports the proposed air toxic rule. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak on behalf of the American Thoracic Society. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Salmi.
Good morning. My name is Chris Salmi. I am Assistant Director of the Division of Air Quality in the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. New Jersey supports this effort by the United States Environmental Protection Agency to set standards to address its finding in 2000 that it is appropriate and necessary to regulate emissions of hazardous air pollutants from power plants. The proposed US EPA standards are achievable. Most of New Jersey's coal-fired power plants already have installed modern air pollution controls that meet these proposed standards, and we are pleased that the US EPA is acting to reduce emissions of poorly controlled plants in other states. Air pollution from sources in other states is a major contributor to poor air quality in New Jersey. Setting emission standards for mercury, non-mercury toxic metals, acid gases, and total metals is a practical and effective way to minimize the impact of hazardous air pollutants on the environment. Additionally, the US EPA should require that the controls needed to achieve these emission standards be operated in such a manner to minimize the air toxic emissions by optimizing the air pollution control systems after construction. For acid gases, the proposal appropriately allows the use of hydrochloric acid or sulfur dioxide as a surrogate for acid hazardous air pollutant emissions. While the proposed sulfur dioxide surrogate standard is not as stringent as the New Jersey 2012 emission standard, it requires a good scrubber that meets the maximum achievable control technology requirements. However, compliance with the hydrochloric acid limit may not guarantee the best sulfur dioxide controls. Additional sulfur dioxide emission reductions may be needed to meet a revised fine particulate matter health and welfare standard if the hydrochloric acid controls do not sufficiently reduce sulfur dioxide emissions. The US EPA should encourage facilities to install the best controls as soon as possible to provide the public health benefits for all pollutants sooner. The US EPA should make it clear that dry sorbent injection may be a good start, a good short-term hydrochloric acid emission reduction measure, but over the longer term, better control of sulfur dioxide may be required. For mercury, the existing New Jersey rule limits for mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants have been in effect for some units since 2007. Compliance with these rules has demonstrated mercury reductions over 90%. The US EPA mercury proposal is also not as stringent as the New Jersey rule, but it requires the installation of good control technology. The US EPA rule should be augmented with a requirement to maximize the emission reductions by optimizing the air pollution control systems after installation. For example, if carbon injection systems are installed, sufficient carbon should be used to reasonably minimize mercury emissions. An example of such provisions are included in the New Jersey Mercury Rule. Also, we prefer a more stringent concentration limit combined with a 90% control option. This is more reflective of maximum achievable control technology for average mercury call and accommodates high mercury call. For total metals, a stringent particulate limit is appropriate to minimize the emissions of particulate hazardous air pollutants, including heavy metals. The USE proposal to utilize fuel sampling to determine compliance for oil burning sources is generally reasonable. Sampling or testing ultra-low sulfur distillate oil is not necessary. Good particulate matter controls are appropriate for heavy oil combustion. For products of incomplete combustion, New Jersey agrees that good combustion is the appropriate way to minimize organic hazardous air pollutant emissions. We specify carbon monoxide emission limits in our rules. These provide a practical and measurable indicator of good combustion. We encourage the US EPA to do the same. The health benefits from this proposed rule are compelling and require expeditious action. The US EPA indicates the proposal will provide significant health benefits in terms of avoided premature deaths, cases of bronchitis, heart attacks, hospital emergency visits, etc. The proposal requires the units to install controls in 3 years with a provision for an additional one-year extension. New Jersey encourages the US EPA to maximize the benefits by requiring those who choose to utilize dry sorbent injection controls to install them quickly and provide the extra year to units which select to install the best controls if more time is necessary. New Jersey will be submitting more detailed written comments to the docket, and I wish to thank you for your attention to this important source of emissions in the nation.
Thank you. It would be helpful if, as part of those comments, you could provide us with a copy of the New Jersey rule so we can see how you handled some of the technical issues associated with the rule. I have one question for Dr. Maneker.
Certainly.
If you could give us a sense of how air pollution compares to other kinds of causes of respiratory disease, what you've been seeing in terms of the relevance of air pollution.
I can say that Well, not having the literature at my fingertips, I can say that there have been probably 20 to 50 papers over the past decade pointing out that even earlier limits in accord with weather and other conditions, even earlier limits of particulate matter and other constituents of air pollution have been temporally associated with respiratory diseases, flares of asthma, emergency room visits, and that's part of the rationale for why the society is so supportive of the proposed rule. We now recognize scientifically that earlier limits were helpful at reducing, but still are not where the limits need to be to reduce the effect of air pollution on health, particularly in children with asthma, as well as the elderly with chronic bronchitis.
Thank you very much, both. Yes, go ahead, Kevin.
Question for Chris. Chris, you had talked about optimizing controls after construction, and I think you gave an example of mercury. Is the focus mercury? And if not, will you be detailing your comments the other areas you think we should be focused on that?
Yes, mercury, as well as I think if depending upon the technology for the acid gases, there may be a way to optimize the reagent, what gets injected, so that you minimize the emissions that come out. And we certainly provide our provisions that we have in our rule, as well as the experience of some sources in New Jersey.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
You say that you've had a more strict rule in New Jersey for a number of years. So at this point, do you have any statistics on the impact, the economic impact on those regulations?
I'll have to go back and check on that one.
Okay, if you have that information, that would be a useful part of the record. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We now have Michael Bradley from the Clean Energy Group and Anthony DeSorbo, who is an individual testifying on his own behalf.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on behalf on the utility toxics rule. My name is Michael Bradley, and I'm the executive director of the Clean Energy Group. I'm testifying today on behalf of the Clean Energy Group's Clean Air Policy Initiative, a coalition of electric power companies. The member companies are some of the nation's largest generators of electricity, with over 170,000 megawatts of electric generating capacity, including 110 megawatts of fossil generating capacity, located throughout the U.S., and together they serve nearly a fifth of all U.S. electric consumers. On behalf of the member companies, I offer the following observations on the proposed utility toxics rule. The rule provides the business certainty required for the industry to move forward with capital investment decisions. The proposal, while not perfect, is reasonable and consistent with the requirements of the Clean Air Act. The electric sector overall is very well positioned to comply. And the Clean Air Act provides sufficient time to comply as well as the authority to accommodate special circumstances where additional time is necessary. It should be no surprise that EPA issued this rule. Since 2000, the electric industry has known that the hazardous air pollutants would be regulated under the Clean Air Act. Now, over a decade later, EPA is under a court order deadline to finalize the rule by November. Additionally, EPA conducted an extensive emission data collection effort with the cooperation of the electric industry to ensure that the standards were based on real-world operating experience. The proposed standards for coal-fired units are not as burdensome as some in the electric sector had anticipated. In fact, if there was any surprise, it was the degree of compliance flexibility proposed by EPA in the rule. For example, the proposal includes work practice standards for dioxins, surrogates for certain hazardous air pollutants, as well as the ability to average among units at a facility. We are evaluating specific technical issues with the rule that we think need to be addressed, but we expect continued engagement with EPA will lead to a final rule that is both balanced and flexible. For example, we recently have seen EPA promptly fix errors identified in the proposed mercury standard for coal-fired power plants. This minor update to the proposed mercury standard is a normal function of the public comment process, and the updated proposed standard will not change the overall impact on the utility toxics rule on affected power plants. The technologies to control hazardous air pollutants, including mercury and acid gases, are commercially available. Also, the industry has very extensive experience with the installation and operation of these controls. Companies will generally have 3 years to comply once the rule is final. We believe that the vast majority of generating units can meet this schedule for several reasons. First, to their credit, many companies have already installed major components of pollution control systems that will be required to comply. For example, about 60% of the nation's coal capacity has already been retrofit with scrubbers. Moreover, as shown in the attachments that I'll submit for the record, at least 30 coal-fired units already, existing units, already comply with each of EPA's proposed emission standards under the rule. It's important to realize that we're not starting from scratch here. Second, EPA allows compliance flexibility in the rule by allowing power plant owners to average their emissions across all the boilers at a facility. Almost 20% of the coal capacity that currently lacks scrubbers happens to be co-located at plants with scrubbers. Great opportunity for averaging. Third, historical experience shows that the industry has the capacity to install a large number of pollution control systems in a relatively short period of time. Between 2008 and 2010, the industry installed about 60 gigawatts of scrubbers and 20 gigawatts of advanced NOx controls. Fourth, most of the control technologies that coal-fired power plants will use to comply, like activated carbon injection and dry sorbent injection, can be installed in less than 2 years. Dry sorbent injection is a proven technology that reduces SO2 and other acid gases. Relative to a scrubber, dry sorbent injection requires much lower capital costs. Generally, dry sorbent injection will be considered for coal units burning low sulfur coal. Other factors that will drive the deployment of DSI include unit size, percentage reduction of emissions required, plant economics, and site-specific characteristics. Several companies have already installed or are in the process of installing DSI technology, including NRG, Duke, and Midwest Generation. If a company is unable to comply in time, the Act allows up to one additional year to install the necessary controls. Furthermore, EPA has the authority and has used this authority in similar situations to provide additional time beyond the one-year extension on a case-by-case basis. This will allow companies to manage multiple control installations and avoid potential reliability concerns. In fact, the U.S. Department of Energy recently projected relatively modest coal plant retirements under EPA's EIR rules in the Annual Energy Outlook 2011. Even a scenario that forecasts SCRs and scrubbers on all coal plants, which certainly we do not expect to be the case, results in only 10 gigawatts of coal plant retirements above the reference case. In conclusion, the Clean Air Act, amended by Congress in 1990 with overwhelming bipartisan support and signed by George H.W. Bush, requires regulations that limit hazardous air pollutants from the electric sector. In 2000, EPA took the first steps towards regulating those emissions, and over a decade later, EPA is now working to finalize the rule. While complying with these obligations will require extensive planning and significant resources, many companies are well on their way to complying. There is no reason to delay the implementation of the utility toxics rule. Proceeding on schedule with the flexibility that's available will provide the business certainty that the industry needs. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. I'll have a question for you regarding international mercury, but first let's hear from Mr. DeSorbo.
Thank you. My name is Anthony DeSorbo. I live in Center City, Philadelphia. I'm an advocate for healthy living and also an avid runner. I'm here today to express my support for the proposed rule because it will improve the health of citizens across the U.S. and make living a healthy lifestyle more attainable, especially for those Pennsylvanians who live near and downwind from emission sources. Pennsylvania is the second most mercury-polluted state in the U.S., Each year, power plants in Pennsylvania emit over 15,000 pounds of mercury into our air and water, endangering the health and quality of life of our fellow citizens. Mercury's toxic effects are worse for children, infants, and fetuses, where mercury exposure damages their fast-developing nervous systems, causing cognitive and learning disorders, motor impairment, speech disorders, and increased risk for cerebral palsy. Adults are also susceptible to mercury poisoning. According to the American Heart Association, there's also growing evidence that prolonged mercury exposure through one's diet can increase the risk of cardiovascular disease and coronary heart disease in adults. Mercury pollution is not enough. Coal and oil-fired plants also emit other toxic metals that are known causes of cancer. They emit acidic gases such as hydrogen chloride and hydrogen fluoride, known to cause irritation to the breathing passages, especially for those with faster breathing rates and those who tend to spend more time outside, such as runners and other athletes. Finally, they emit particulate matter pollution, which aggravates asthma and causes cardiovascular disease. I support the proposed mercury and air toxic standards rule because it's a smart and responsible action that protects public health. It will reduce all the aforementioned pollutants in our environment and subsequently our bodies. Everyone should have the right to live a healthy life, and we should not trample over that right just to power our homes and our offices. Fortunately, technologies and practices that greatly reduce the amount of mercury and other pollutants emitted from coal and oil plants exist, and the proposed rule will make sure that these technologies and practices are used to their fullest extent. Once fully implemented, the proposed rule will reduce mercury emissions by 91% and reduce the number of infants born with cognitive and neurological disorders. The health benefit from the reduction of other pollutants will also be astounding, reducing the number of cases of chronic bronchitis, non-fatal heart attacks, and asthma. As a final note, I support the proposed rule because it also makes economic sense. The national cost for implementation is tiny compared to the health care savings. Even after the costs to implement the proposed rule, our nation will save over $100 billion in health care. Finally, installing pollution controls necessary to meet the proposed standards will require and create jobs in manufacturing, skilled labor, engineering, and management. So not only is the proposed rule good for the health of the people, it's also good for the health of our economy. Thank you.
Thank you. The question I had was one of the concerns we've heard expressed regarding the mercury component of the rule is that much of the mercury that is deposited in the U.S. comes from sources emitting it from overseas. And is there a perspective from the Clean Energy Group on that issue and what the appropriate response is?
We don't have a position on international mercury emissions. We recognize that there is a global transport mechanism. But we also recognize that the Clean Air Act is very clear about the need for the sector to reduce mercury emissions like other sectors have in the U.S. And we have the hands-on experience of reducing mercury emissions at a number of coal facilities from member companies and believe that it's time to get on with it.
Thank you very much to both. Oh, there's one more. Kevin?
Michael, you cited three companies that were using or were planning to use DSI. I think it was NRG, Duke, and Midwest Gen. To the extent that you can document any more of that in your comments, that would be quite helpful.
We're definitely planning to do that, Kevin. Thank
you. Okay. Thank you. We now have two members of the public who will be testifying, John McLaughlin and Jack Miller. Please come up. Okay, Mr. McLaughlin.
Hello. Thanks for letting me speak. I work with ex-offenders and people coming out of prison, vets coming out of prison, and a lot of them live in halfway houses. They're held accountable for every move they make to the parole officers and at the halfway houses. And one time I was in York Haven, Pennsylvania, and I was with a buddy. We were right on the Susquehanna River, and we were near a coal plant, and they were just dumping fly ash, which they're not supposed to do. They actually pump it into lakes. And if you go on Google Maps, where the borders of West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, you can see one of these fly ash lakes. It's bright blue, like Caribbean water. One of them burst and pretty much wiped out a town in Tennessee. But I was wondering, as I'm watching this fly ash, you know, who's holding these coal companies accountable? They're not supposed to do that, but here they are doing it. And I think there's too much this notion that the government is getting too big and it's intrusive in people's lives. I think that the government needs to be big and it needs to be intrusive in these corporations that will murder us for a dollar. I think it's the duty of the government to impose these regulations and enforce them and hold these corporations accountable. They make billions of dollars giving us electricity, which we need, but I don't think it's wrong to enforce regulations on them.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Miller.
Yes, I'm Jack Miller. I'm not here representing anybody. As a matter of fact, I did not really intend to speak, but on my drive up here from Ocean City, I felt compelled to speak. I admire what you're doing so much. Do you need to stand up? I mean, I'm only going to speak for a minute. You can take 30 seconds of my time and stand and stretch.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to take you up on that while you speak, and I will stand, so thank you.
Please do. I'm not sure what to do with this. I just photocopied this morning. This is a record of some blood work that I had done 2 years ago because I was suffering from many different kinds of problems. And I can give you this copy. My levels of mercury are rated very elevated. Everything else is under control. Mercury is out of control. I have a triple whammy here. I lived in Upper Township, which is where B.L. England coal-fired plant exists. I worked in Ocean City. So whichever way the wind blew, I'm getting B.L. England into me. I also fish, and I used to eat fish. I don't eat fish very much anymore. I was kayaking yesterday with this on my mind, and I caught a bluefish. And I looked at it like it was something out of a 50s sci-fi film. I was afraid of this fish. It is no longer my friend in terms of diet. It is a polluted, unhealthy thing for me to be with. there are 13 states that I read somewhere that have banned the manufacturing and distribution of thermometers, fever thermometers, and that's because they contain mercury. And I think that we know that the mercury is bad. And so a state will say no to that because it's a very visible, concrete thing. It's much harder to say no to the air, which we can't really grasp concretely. We've had issues like this in the past and have done the right thing. I think of polio. We found out polio is bad. It cripples children. And we put together our resources and our good science, and we put an end to polio, basically. We've made adjustments with products like gasoline. We used to have leaded gas. We said lead is not good for us. We eliminated the leaded gas. Somehow the oil companies survived that particular blow. I believe the energy companies will survive a blow that says stop polluting the air. We used to think of coal burning as a cure for the winter cold. It turns out that cure is more aligned with bleeding of patients, how we used to do that. It's not a cure. It's harming us. How might we pay for this? Because it is going to require rearranging of monies. And I feel, in speaking here, there's all these facts and experts and people who really can give you the numbers, so I won't do that. But I do know that there is an increasing gap between the very wealthy and the not so wealthy. There are ways that we can probably redistribute monies. So, one way we can pay for this is through cutting spending, taxes. There's alternatives. The other way we can pay for this is with our children. And we will be paying for this with our children. They will not have the same opportunities in terms of good health that the generations before them had. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you. And although I'm a little bit off the topic of the rule, I do have a question for both of you, because it's always a challenge for a federal agency to figure out how best to engage the public on the work that we do that will affect them. And for some set of reasons, both of you decided to take the time to come here and testify at this hearing. And if you want to give us any insights as to what it is about this rule or this process that caused you to decide that you wanted to participate, that would sure help us as we try to do more of that in the future. Either of you have a reaction?
Yes. This is a wonderful opportunity. This is government. This is American citizens helping to determine policy. How could I not want to be present at such a thing? It's a grand opportunity, and your dedication and all of these people who have taken their time, whether they're doing it professionally or just someone like me. So I thought that maybe I could put some images to those facts that you're receiving. I don't know the facts on these things. I know that mercury is a poison. So I just thought it was a duty as a citizen to be involved in such hearings.
Yeah, same thing with me. I'm just, I see what's going on in the news and how the rich are getting richer. The poor just worse off. We're struggling, and we got to deal with this pollution, all that kind of stuff. And I just, I'm getting fed up, and I want to do something about it. So I'm glad that we have this opportunity to speak to the government. I just feel like I need to do something other than just vote every couple of years.
Well, thanks to both of you for coming here today.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Mariko Franz, who is also testifying as a member of the public, and Paul J. Mellon, Jr. from Novetis Solutions.
Is it okay if after I testify I don't think she'll sit still?
It's fine. It's fine. Not a problem at all.
Okay. My name is Mariko Franz. So I just wrote my testimony. When my daughter was 9 months old, a routine blood test revealed that she had an elevated lead level. Like any mother, I immediately felt anxious. Questions whirled as I read through the literature provided by the doctor, and I wondered how this would impact her cognitive and behavioral development. While we were able to swiftly identify the source of the lead and we were able to bring the level back down to normal, still, I couldn't help but worry if the damage had already been done. Today, she seems like a bright and well-adjusted 2-year-old, and so it would seem my initial fears have been assuaged. Still, I wonder if anything this toxin has deprived my daughter. I mention this story because, like lead, mercury is a toxin especially dangerous to fetuses and young children that can cause irreversible damage, and like lead, it exists in our environment as a seemingly invisible substance. And for as much literature as I read to prepare myself for motherhood, I could have never expected the sheer volume of environmental dangers I would face. While it's easy to avoid things like tuna and fish for myself and my daughter, I can't avoid the air we breathe. I know, we'll get it next. And the fumes laden with toxins like mercury that accompany it. As mothers, it seems that every day we're up against some new and ever-daunting challenge, whether it's the toxins in breast milk, BPA in plastic, pesticides in food, the lead in old homes, and the mercury in the air. Lead was an obstacle I wasn't expecting in my journey as a mother, and I hope to prevent any more obstacles like it. While we are still experiencing the aftermath of lead, this country realized the danger associated with it, and we did the right and safe thing for our children, and we banned it. We need to do the same thing for mercury and other air toxics. So I'm asking just that you please enact the mercury and air toxic standard.
Thank you. Thank you. And I will ask the panel now if they have any questions for you. So, okay, you can go back to being a mom now. Thank you very much for your testimony. All right, Mr. Mellon.
Good afternoon. Well, that'll be a hard act to follow. My name is Paul Mellon. I'm president of Novitas Solutions. We're a small company based in Philadelphia. We make products from industrial-type products made from 100% recycled glass. In fact, one of our major brands is called New Age Blast Media, and it's used for abrasive blasting. Our product is safe for workers because it does not contain free silica, nor does it contain heavy metals or toxins. In March 2011, the EPA Office of Air proposed the rule that we're here today discussing, which is to set limits on the amount of toxins coming out of the smokestacks of power plants. The EPA is using their mandate under the Clean Air Act. One of the issues that they addressed is that there are harmful particle pollution will also be reduced, preventing hundreds of thousands of illnesses and up to 17,000 premature deaths each year from breathing what is in the toxins contained in coal combustion waste. Today's hearing on this issue of managing the waste output from coal power plants, however, should be put into context because this discussion is directly related to renewed efforts across the entire EPA to apply sound science to manage the impact of coal waste on human health and the environment. Coal is a very important source of power, I think everyone here can agree, to this country and to especially Pennsylvania. In fact, the Philadelphia Inquirer this week on the front page devoted an article to this meeting and to the whole issue of coal combustion waste. As noted here, about 40 power plants are currently in operation in Pennsylvania alone, generating, yes, a lot of power that's needed and very affordable power for people, but also generating a lot of toxic waste. So the goal of the EPA seems to be twofold: reduce the impact of harmful combustion waste to human health, while also ensuring that there's technology used to keep coal affordable in terms of its power generation. I applaud those efforts today, and I would like to state that this is a perfect opportunity for the EPA Office of Air to work with your sister division, the Office of Solid Waste, and share some of the information that your office has on the toxic impact of breathing CCR waste. The Office of Solid Waste is also engaged in a very similar discussion about how to minimize the impact of the disposal of CCR waste and their products. However, it absolutely overlaps with a lot of the work that's being discussed here today. Just as there was a lack of national rules on air emissions, which we're addressing today, believe it or not, there is no national guidelines currently in place that regulate the disposal of 130 million tons of solid waste that comes from coal power plants. In 2000, the OSW issued a ruling in which they declared CCR waste was non-hazardous. In addition to that, in 2000, they created what is called the Beneficial Use Program. The Beneficial Use Program was to take the coal waste and actually turn it into products that the EPA certified were safe to use. One of those products I'm here to talk to you about today. This is a bag of Black Beauty abrasives. Okay, this product is made by Harsco Corporation. Ironically, they sell about 1 million tons of this product every year for sand blasting. They're headquartered actually right here in Pennsylvania. You'll notice on the back of the bag, the product says it contains coal slag. The product has low health risk by inhalation. Treat as a nuisance dust. The product in this bag is 100% coal combustion waste. It is the exact product that comes out of these coal power plants. Harsco is telling people it's safe to breathe, calling it a nuisance dust. I think that the Office of Air actually would find the statement kind of curious because in 1992, the Office of Air did a study for the shipyard industry. And in that study, they discovered that Black Beauty actually did the study on Black Beauty, found that 0.25 pounds of per ton of hazardous waste was contained in this bag. One shipyard alone, this study showed, generated 1,700 pounds of toxic waste, which your study also admitted was put into non-hazardous landfills because the OSW put it into the beneficial use program and said it's non-hazardous. In 1997, your office issued regulations on the blast industry. Again, I will read what they had to say about Black Beauty abrasives. Coal and smelter slags are commonly used for abrasive blasting at shipyards. Black Beauty, which consists of crushed slag from coal-fired utility boilers, is a commonly used slag. Slags have the advantage of low silica content, but have been documented to release other contaminants, including hazardous airborne pollutants, into the air. I should also note, by the way, this bag was purchased about 15 miles from here, over the counter, at a distributor in Center City, or actually North Philadelphia. For about $10 a bag, you can have a bag of what you're saying has hazardous air pollutants in it. I would also take this time to say that in mid-July, this July, your office is going to enact a new rule for the metal fab industry. And again, you address abrasive blasting. And in the rule that's going to affect hundreds of businesses across this country, the Office of Air makes the following statement. The final rule requires owners and operators who of dry abrasive blasting operations to comply with the following four management pollution prevention practices to minimize hazardous air pollutants in the operation. The first thing you say, switch from a high particulate matter blast media, such as sand, to a low-emitting blast media, such as crushed glass. In the background document of this rule, you actually address, because a commenter put some information to you when we were promulgating the rule and said, what if you're using coal slag? Coal slag has hazardous air pollutants. The Office of Air said, therefore, if the operation is using blast media that contains hazardous air pollutants, such as slag-based abrasives, all of the management practices would apply for the new hazardous regulations. I would like to take a minute and say that I would like to thank the EPA, Office of Air, for making this rule change and advocating crushed glass. Turns out that the commentator who submitted that information was, in fact, myself, as Novitas Solutions. It was one of the first things we did when we broke out as a separate company. But just to recap this real quick, so while the Office of Air has studied extensively Black Beauty and issued for the last 20 years studies detailing how toxic this product is for people to breathe. And by the way, it's not just workers breathing it. If you go across bridges, if you're around tanks, this stuff is blasted into the air. It falls on the ground. It falls on workers' clothes. If you're driving by, it's what's coming through your radiators. The OSW in 2000 created, like I said, the partnership program with the industry, the CCP2 program. I read what this bag said. Here's what the EPA's own website, Office of Solid Waste, has to say about coal slag.
We will need you to wrap up pretty quickly, though. Go ahead.
Border slag is sought after as replacement for sand. Its use eliminates the potential health risk of silicosis. No mention of hazardous airborne pollutants. As I said, I appreciate the opportunity to come in today. My goal was to say that the information that you have here, I can no longer give to the Office of Solid Waste because they closed down the public comment on the regulation of these type of products. I would ask, as the EPA, if you could perhaps send the information from North Carolina up to Washington, D.C., so that this message gets to the entire EPA and not just the Office of Air. Thank you.
Thank you, and we will work with the people here to make sure that as we look at the comments you submit to us, to the extent they have overlap with the work being done by the Office of Solid Waste on that rulemaking, that we take that into account. There is a work group in the agency that has members of both parts of the agency involved in it, and they're involved to some extent in the development of this air-related rule. We're involved to some extent with them on the development of the coal ash rule, and we'll make sure those perspectives are shared.
That's good.
So
that's,
thank you.
Thank you, and that's good to hear. Just real quick, that I have worked extensively also with the Office of Solid Waste. In fact, I was in Washington, D.C. talking to them yesterday, and this whole topic came up, and there seemed to be a little bit of confusion in terms of whether or not they're actually looking at the information from the Office of Air, so it's good to hear you say that.
Okay. We will work to sort that out. Thank you.
Thank you.